I, Los Angeles. For correct time all the time, wear a Bulova. Here's the greatest watch value ever offered, the Bulova Dean. 15 jewels, only $24.75.
Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood, starring the regular Good News entertainers, plus three distinguished guest stars, Robert Montgomery, Rosalind Russell, and Melissa Gorgeous. And here is your host for the evening, Robert Young.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Getting right down to business, Meredith Wilson opens the program with a new song called Cuckoo in the Clock, in which I hope to participate if I can possibly get up the necessary nerve before the second chorus. Go ahead, Meredith. I don't believe in gossiping. It definitely is wrong. But here's a juicy morsel I've just got to pass along. Frank Morgan sparked a gal last night, as romantic as could be, but a little birdie overheard and spilled it all to me. There they were, he was baby talking her, and the cuckoo in the clock went cuckoo. Every 15 minutes he crew, cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. Be a pal, said Morgan to his gal, and the cuckoo in the clock went cuckoo. I believe they're starting to woo, 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 woo. They didn't know that everything they said was overheard. They didn't hear that little birdie giving them the bird. So he said with a sigh, who's your little peachy pie? And the cuckoo in the clock went cuckoo. No, I'm just a little cuckoo. I'm not as cuckoo as you. Then he closed the door and withdrew. Cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo.
They didn't know that everything they said was overheard. They didn't hear the little birdie giving them the bird. So he said with a sigh, who's your little peachy pie? And the cuckoo in the clock went cuckoo. So I'm just a little cuckoo. I'm not as cuckoo as you.
Then as Frankie said his adieu, his girl was heard as she joined the bird. He's just a flatfoot floogie with a floy, floy. Cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo.
Well, that was mighty good singing, Bob.
I should say it was, Bobby.
Why, Rosalind Russell. Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Meredith.
Never mind. Miss Russell, I'm glad you're here.
Oh, well, that's very nice, Mr. Wilson.
I got a special reason.
Oh, come, Meredith.
I wrote a valentine for Miss Russell, only I didn't know where to mail it to her.
Well, suppose you let me hear it.
Then if it's good enough, she'll give you her address.
Oh, that's fine. Let me see. I put it in my valentine pocket. Here it is. A valentine. This valentine comes from my heart. And the heart, you know, is a muscle. To place the horse before the cart. I love you, Rosalind Russell.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I'd mail it to her in care of her agent, Meredith.
Oh, no, don't do that. I want it right now. And I'd like to make up a valentine for you, Mr. Wilson.
Go ahead. I'm all ears.
So you are.
They're under his hair.
Now, cut it out, Bob. Let me hear the valentine, Miss Russell.
Oh, all right. Now, give me a few seconds to think of one. A valentine. In every toolbox is, of course, the wrench that's known as Filson. To put the cart before the horse, I love you, Meredith Wilson.
Oh, it must be great to be able to make up stuff like that.
I never knew I could do it before. But Mr. Wilson is really wonderful.
Bob, excuse me.
Now, take it easy, Tony. Say hello to Rosalind. Rosalind.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Listen, Bob, you see these two bottles?
Yes.
Well, taste this one, will you?
Okay.
Taste all right?
Sure.
Don't feel anything?
No, it's plain water.
Oh, then the other one must be the rat poison.
Hey, come back here.
What's the matter?
Why, Tony, Martin, what kind of a joke is that?
Well, that's my opening joke for my next personal appearance tour.
Well, as long as you're trying out your act, you might as well give us your opening song, too.
Okay, Bobby.
I promise you with heart sincere that I will always love you, dear. That when you need me, I'll be near. I promise you. I promise you I'll build a shrine where we can keep our love divine until the very end of time. I promise you. With every dawn that I awaken, I know my chances will increase to keep the vow I've taken. To see that your joys never cease. I promise you, your heart will sing in what will seem eternal spring. I'll try to bring you everything. I promise you, my love for you is as great as a love can be. I faithfully take an oath on all that concerns us both. I promise you with heart sincere that I will always love you, dear. That when you need me, I'll be near. I promise you. I promise you I'll build a shrine where we can keep our love divine until the very end of time. I promise you with every dawn that I awaken, I know my chances will increase to keep the vow I've taken, to see that your joy never cease. I promise you, your heart will sing in what will seem eternal spring. I'll try to bring you everything. I'll live for you, I'll dream for you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Because Snooks has been such a good girl, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is taking her to see the World's Fair. Daddy couldn't go without leaving his office in perfect shape, so they're taking a very late train. It's almost 2 a.m. as we find them in the depot.
Daddy!
Hmm? What do you want?
Who's that man?
What man?
With the hammer, the one that's knocking on the wheel.
He's an engineer. He's the man who drives a train.
Why?
Because that's his job.
Why is he knocking on the wheel?
He has to test them every trip.
Do they taste good?
I said test them, not taste them. Now, don't get too close to those tracks, Snooks.
All right. Daddy.
What is it?
He's holding a can under the train.
All right, so he's holding a can under the train.
Why?
He's lubricating the machinery. Come and sit down.
Aren't we going to get on?
No, that's a milk train.
Is the man going to milk it?
No, he's not going to milk it.
Why is he holding the can under it?
I told you he was lubricating the machinery. That can contains oil, and he's pouring it into the train's inside.
Did the train holler, Daddy?
Yes, the train hollered.
Is it castor oil?
Oh, and I let your mother talk me into taking you.
Why didn't we take Mommy, Daddy?
You take a ham sandwich to a banquet?
Huh?
Nothing. Mommy has to stay home and take care of the baby. Now, come over here and sit still until our train comes.
All right. What's that, Daddy?
It's a train whistle.
I want one.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. You can't have a train whistle.
Why?
Because you can't. And don't bother me with questions. I can barely keep my eyes open. Now, sit still.
All right. Daddy.
What do you want?
I want some chewing gum.
You can't have any chewing gum. What do you want with chewing gum at 2 o'clock in the morning?
I'm hungry.
Well, eat an apple.
No, I want a lollipop.
You just said you wanted chewing gum. Now make up your mind. Which do you want, a lollipop or chewing gum?
An ice cream cone.
Now that's enough. I realize it's way past your bedtime and you don't know what you're saying, so. But just the same, I'm not going to let you drive me crazy.
Why?
Because I'm too tired for any nonsense. Oh, I hear the train coming. Let me get these bags.
I want to carry rock.
All right, you carry the dark one. It's lighter than this light one.
Huh?
I'll carry the light bag because it's heavier.
The light bag is heavier than the heavy one?
No. The dark bag is lighter because the light bag is heavy. I put all the heavy stuff in the light bag to make the dark bag lighter.
Is there a doctor on the train, Daddy?
Now, don't you start that stuff with me. You know very well what I'm talking about.
Do you know, Daddy?
Oh, let me carry them both. Now, come on now. Here's the train.
Oh, come on, Daddy.
Be careful. Stick close to me.
Hold on to my coat.
Yes.
Yes, I'll hold it, Daddy.
Here we are. Now, be careful now. You get on first. Now, watch your step. Up you go. Go on. Up you go.
Now,
through that door to the left. Don't make any noise.
Why is it so dark?
Shh. It's a sleeping car. No, leave those curtains alone. Quit peeking in there. Here's our section. Upper and lower nine. Let me get these bags onto the seat.
Are we going to sleep here?
Yes, and don't talk now. You'll disturb the other passengers.
What does that sign say, Daddy?
It says quiet.
What?
It says quiet. Climb up the ladder and get undressed.
Where?
Right up there. That's the upper. You'll sleep there.
In that little swing?
No. That's for your clothes. Come on now. Up you go.
I don't want to sleep out there.
You want to sleep in the lower?
No.
Then where do you... I mean, where do you want to sleep?
I don't know.
Oh, please. Slap the whole car awake. Climb up there like a good girl.
I'm afraid to sleep there alone.
Don't be silly. The angels will take care of you.
Where's the angel, Daddy?
Why, they're right here in this car. Now, don't you worry.
Oh, shut up with that racket!
Is that one of the angels, Daddy?
I told you to keep quiet. Wake up all the people. Now, get undressed.
All right. Daddy!
What is it?
Tell me your story.
No, not tonight. All right.
And Winchell called her a blessed event.
Hey, what is this? Is that your kid, mister, or is it a picnic?
It's my kid, and it's no picnic.
Oh, keep her quiet. Let a guy get some sleep.
I'm sorry. Now, listen, I can't tell you any stories. It's too late.
No, no, jump out of the window.
Oh, wait a minute, please. All right. I'll tell you a quick story, but no interruption. You understand?
Uh-huh.
Now, this is the story of Dick Whittington and his cat.
Oh, I like it.
Shh. Once upon a time, there was a little boy named Dick. His parents had died, and he was...
Whose parents?
Dick's parents. They had... Dick who? Dick Whittington.
Who's he?
The boy in the story.
Which story?
The story I'm telling you.
Daddy.
Well, don't interrupt. That After Dick's parents died, he was very poor. So he took his cat and started out for London. He tried to get a job.
The cat tried?
No, Dick tried.
Dick?
Dick Whittington! Now listen, mister. You don't make that kid go to sleep, I'll bust you right in the nose.
Okay, okay. You hear that, Snooks? If that man starts a fight with me, I'll have you to thank for it.
You're welcome, Daddy.
Go to sleep. Not another sound out of you.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. Daddy!
What is it?
Take me down.
What for?
Because I have to get down.
Just fall up.
I couldn't help it. I want to get down quick.
Why didn't you think of that before you got up there?
Because I wasn't thirsty then.
Well, you can't come now. Now go to sleep.
Bring me a drink, Daddy.
No. If you call me again, I'll come up there and give you a spanking.
Oh. Daddy.
Look. What did I tell you?
When you come up to spank me, bring me a drink.
Snooks, I won't stand.
That's the limit. I ain't gonna stand for this.
Bust him in the nose, Daddy.
Here, and I'll let you have it, too.
Now, just a minute. Don't you lay a hand on that child, or I'll tear you in pieces.
Suck him, Daddy.
Well, make her keep quiet.
I'll make her keep quiet, but nobody spanks my kid, understand? Nobody but me.
Bob, I have here a letter that's as short as it is interesting, and I'd like to read it for a very good reason.
Go right ahead, Warren.
Well, first, let me thank Mrs. R.S. Freeman of Hightstown, New Jersey, for sending it to us. It begins...
My husband is a mining engineer and spends a great deal of time in South America. Several times a year, when he's in Caracas, near the Venezuelan coast, I go down to remain with him. In spite of the trouble, I always take a sufficient supply of Maxwell House coffee with me to last until my return. It's more than worth the bother I go to, since we both enjoy your wonderful Maxwell House coffee to the very last pound.
Thank you again, Mrs. Freeman. Friends, my main reason for reading that letter was to stress this important point. You see, Mrs. Freeman had carried her supply of Maxwell House coffee all the way down to Venezuela, and on a slow boat, that's quite a trip. But no matter how long the trip, and no matter how many pounds of Maxwell House Mrs. Freeman had taken, she could still be absolutely sure that the last pound of coffee would be every bit as fresh and delicious as the first. And that's because Maxwell House coffee is packed in the familiar blue super vacuum can. You see, unlike ordinary methods of packing, which allow air to enter and steal away coffee flavor, Maxwell House is taken still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven and packed in airtight super vacuum cans. Thus, no air can get in, no flavor can get out. All the fragrance and flavor of these superb coffees are sealed in for you, none wasted. You get full flavor, full value every pound. So remember to ask your grocer for the new Maxwell House tomorrow. Your entire family will delight in the full, rich flavor and heartwarming satisfaction of this famous blend of coffee, now marvelously improved. And when you ask for Maxwell House, you can be sure you're getting coffee not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
No member of our Maxwell House program has met with greater success than the next lady we have the honor to present. By popular demand, we bring you the grand singing star of the Great Waltz, Miss Melissa Korcher. For her first number, she has chosen an aria from Rossini's Barber of Seville, Cavatina, Miss Korcher.
Lord, you
Ladies and gentlemen, the gorgeous Miss Porges will be back again later with another number. And now we continue with another...
But, Rosalind, darling, you're mistaken.
Frank Morgan, I listened with my own ears last week.
No,
besides, Eleanor Powell told me.
Oh, she could.
I think you're mean.
Now, honey, now don't act like that. You're the only dame, I mean, the girl, that raised 1-2 with me. I'll leave it at Bob.
Oh, you probably arranged something with him.
Rosalind, it would be impossible to arrange any kind of a shady deal with such a high-minded fellow as Bob Young. He's the soul of honor, darling.
Oh.
Bob, did I or did I not tell you last week that Rosalind Russell is the only girl in Hollywood I care about?
You did not.
Well, what can you expect from such a lying toad?
Glad to help you out at any time, kid.
Frank Morgan, I hate you. No. Here, take back your old gardenias.
Oh. Ha, 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 ha. What are you smirking at, Young?
They're the same gardenias you gave Eleanor last Thursday.
They are not. And besides, I've had them on the ice the whole time. You believe me, don't you, Eleanor? I don't have anybody but Rosalind.
I believe every word you say, Charlie. I mean, Tom.
Oh, and I was just about to make you a present of this beautiful scarab.
I don't want your flowers, and I don't want your imitation jewelry.
Imitation? Why, Rosalind, this stone is priceless. It's unique. It came from the left eye socket of the famous Egyptian idol, Rahuli Meb.
It did?
Yes.
Oh, how did you get it?
Oh, you must have read of the Morgan expedition up the Nile. Although that is a chapter of my life that I prefer to forget.
I'll lay you 2-1 that he remembers it.
Oh, Frank. Really, I'd love to hear about it.
Well, all right. In the year 1919, I was touring the world for sport and pleasure. I enjoyed the salmon fishing in Norway. I loved hunting the chamois in the Alps. And there was fine sport with a quail in Belgium.
Grouse in Scotland?
No, I never complain. But as winter came on, I found myself in Egypt at Shepherd's Hotel in Cairo. I was sitting on the piazza one morning having an Egyptian breakfast when I overheard a fascinating conversation.
Excuse me, Frank, I beg your pardon. Yes. What's an Egyptian breakfast?
Oh, it's a very interesting native meal. It consists of a well-done steak, a pint of whiskey, and a bulldog.
What's a bulldog for?
To eat the steak. As I was munching the whiskey, I heard two Bedouins talking in their native tongue, and something about the mysterious way they glanced about them attracted my attention.
They were plotting.
They were, Meredith. They were planning to visit the sacred temple of Rahuli Meb in the Hidden Valley, murder the gods, and escape with a fortune in gems.
Jeepers, Frank.
Yes.
Did you report to the local police? Did you report that?
No, they're a very inefficient lot. And besides, we'd had a misunderstanding about a disorderly conduct rap that I shouldn't have. I determined to frustrate the villains myself.
Better thief to catch a thief.
Young, when you were a kid, I bet you carried itching powder.
Well, get back to Egypt, Frank.
Well, that night I set off for the Hidden Valley with two camels and a goat skin full of water. I won't bore you with the details of my trip through the desert.
Oh, please do, Frank.
Well,
you're not boring me, Frank.
Oh, charming fellow. In any case, the trip through the desert was a nightmare. But thank heaven I arrived in time to stop the crooks from getting the jewels of Rahuli Meb.
They hadn't got there yet.
Oh, they most certainly had, my dears. I pushed open the door of the temple. There were these two infidels, scrapping the priceless gems into a sack.
What did you do?
I was in a difficult position because I was unarmed. But when a Morgan can talk, he's not yet beaten. I turned the full force of my eloquence upon the pair of murderous thieves. I appealed to their sense of honesty, to their faith in Rahuli Meb, to the Bedouin code of ethics. And believe it or not, I finally convinced them they should not make off with a sack of jewels.
And they returned the swag to the temple?
No, we split it three ways.
Oh.
I got out as far as I could and headed back for Cairo. But inside of 2 hours, I was lost in the desert.
Oh, how awful.
Oh, thank you, darling. To make matters worse, a monsoon sprang up, a ferocious, deadly wind hurling the sand 180 miles an hour. In fact, it was almost as bad as it is here in Hollywood today.
Well, excuse me, Frank, but what is a monsoon?
A monsoon, my boy, is a terrific, continuous blast of hot air.
That ain't a monsoon. That's Morgan.
Shall I continue?
Oh, please do, Frank. I'm dying.
Well, when the wind subsided, the blazing sun beat down on my bare head and drove me almost mad. My throat was parched, my tongue was swollen, my mind began to wander. Imagine my feelings when suddenly there loomed up before me in the haze of the desert a fully equipped drive-in soda fountain.
A mirage?
No, it was a drive-in. A little Arab was running the joint. Well, I fortified myself with a couple of Maltese and asked him the way back to Cairo. But the cunning fellow refused to tell me without a fabulous reward.
Well, what did you do?
I had to give him the sacred jewels, all except this scarab. And then he told me the directions.
Were they very complicated?
No, he just told me to walk one block east and take the red car. Well, I took it, and that's the end of the story. Would you like to look at the scarab, Rosalind?
Oh, yes, Frank, please. Oh, beautiful.
Well, it's yours, my dear. It's the only one of its kind in the world.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
Well, one moment, please. There's an old Egyptian custom that might bring us luck. I quote from the sacred book of the Saboba. When thou givest a gift, take something in return, even though it be the smallest silver coin.
Oh, I think that's lovely. Yeah. Let me see. No, I haven't got a dime.
Oh, that's good.
Here's a quarter, Frank.
Oh, may good fortune travel with you, my dear. Goodbye.
Oh, I'll see you later, gentlemen.
Gee, that was really a stunning piece of jewelry. And to think it's the only one of its kind in the world.
Ah, yes.
I wish I could have had it for Betty.
Gee, Rosalind got it for a quarter. My wife would have loved it, too.
Well, that's all right, fellas. Here's two more for 35. Well, I'll see you later.
Warren?
Warren, I suspect that wonderful fragrance of freshly made coffee announces our familiar Thursday evening custom, huh?
It does indeed, Bob. And tonight, as a special guest of honor, we've asked Rosalind Russell to join us in a steaming, freshly made cup of the new Maxwell House coffee.
Thank you, gentlemen. Drinking a cup of your Maxwell House coffee will simply be carrying on an old Russell tradition.
And an old American tradition, Miss Russell. You see, every Thursday evening at this time, we pause in our festivities for a moment of relaxation over a cup of this coffee that's good to the last drop. And so, friends, to all of you who are enjoying our show, we again extend a cordial invitation to join us right now in this friendly Maxwell House custom. Meredith, music, please, and make it as mellow as Maxwell House.
We pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
Continue our good news Maxwell House show. Harry Rapp has produced for MGM a thrilling and highly dramatic American picture of the colorful West entitled Let Freedom Ring. Tony Martin sings the inspiring song that Nelson Eddy sings in this great picture, Where Else But Here.
Where else but here are you the master of your own little world? Where else but here do hearts beat faster when the flag is unfurled? For your peace and security, you should stand up and cheer. Where can you live, laugh, and love? Where else but here? You can count on friends when you need them. You can't be a slave for their freedom. You can always save for a future rainy day. Oh, you can say whatever you choose to, laugh and love the way that you used to, dare to share the laughter of children when you're gay. For the peace and security, you should stand up and cheer. And tell me, say, can't you see? Where else but here?
We can eat what we want. We can read what we want. We can come. We can go as we please. We can love whom we want. We can talk as we want. We can watch our children grow. You can vote, you can think, you can scheme, you can sing, you can smile and you can hold your head up high. You can follow any dream, you can hope and you can scheme, you can dream, you can work, you can play. Where else but here are you the master of your own little world? Here, do hearts beat faster when the flag is unfurled? For your peace and security, you should stand up and cheer for the home of the brave.
Sorry that had to be your swan song, but it couldn't have been more beautiful. Tonight in the MGM Theater of the Air, we present several scenes from Fast and Loose, the MGM picture starring Robert Montgomery and Rosalind Russell. My good friend, Bob Montgomery.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 2 days, I've been suffering with a very bad attack of laryngitis. And up to a half hour before this program started, I'd hoped that it would be possible for me to go on and play these scenes from Fast and Loose with Miss Russell. However, I find, as you can tell by listening, that it would be impossible for me to do it. Bob Young has very kindly offered to take my place. I want to thank him for his kindness and his courtesy and tell him that I hope he enjoys playing opposite Miss Russell on the air as much as I did in the picture. I know you will bear with him because he is unfamiliar with the script. He is probably the most distinguished understudy I ever had. I hope that I'll have the privilege of being on the program in the near future. Thank you very much.
The story of Fast and Loose is the story of young Mr. Joel Sloan, played by Bob Young, the understudy, and his lovely wife, Garda, portrayed by Rosalind Russell. Young Mr. Sloan is in the rare book business when he's in it. But at heart, Mr. Joel Sloan loves to play detective. At the moment, he and his wife are in their charming apartment in New York City, which gives evidence that Joel and Garda Sloan's previous evening was fast and loose. It is 10 a.m., but Joel and Garda are still asleep.
Joel.
Huh?
Joel.
What?
The phone. It's ringing.
What do you expect it to do, sing?
Maybe the building's on fire.
Oh, no, the building can't be on fire, because I'm so cold.
Let's play a game of casino to see who answers the phone.
I never gamble.
I do all the work around here while you just lie and... Hello?
Who is it?
It's Christopher Oates, and he's babbling incoherently.
Oh, give me the phone.
Joel Sloan speaking.
When you hear the musical note, it'll be exactly...
What? You mean now, this minute? Well, all right, Mr. Oates.
I'll meet you at my office in an hour.
How do you feel?
Oh, all right, I guess. What did we eat last night? Fried carpet?
Oh, I feel as if I swallowed a jam session, jitterbugs and all. What did Oates want?
No, he mumbled about something important. I hope he can remember what it is when he gets to the office. Garda, is there a bathroom in this apartment?
Now, how should I know? We've only lived here 2 years.
Well, I'll try this door. Maybe I'll be lucky. Oh. Garda! There's a man in the bathroom. He's got on a pair of my pajamas. He looks like a tramp or something. I don't know who you are, my friend, but if you'll stand still, I'll shave you.
Oh, you fool. That's a mirror.
Oh.
By superhuman effort, Joel and Garda managed to crack their weary feet to an office door tastefully inscribed, Joel Sloan, Rare Books.
Now be careful, darling. The mailman probably left us a giant stack of orders. Don't trip over them.
One little letter, my sweet, and probably a bill. You open it. I faint easily.
Looks like the rare book business has crawled into a hole to die.
Oh, it's not really the business is so bad, but our budget is always miles ahead of it. Every time we make a sale, we throw a party.
We should have invited the landlord to some of these parties. Now he's mad at us. This is to advise you that unless payment in full is made within 10 days, your stock and fixtures will be sold at auction.
Oh, what a pity they abolished slavery. You'd bring such a nice price. So, darling, what are we going to do?
Well, I wish somebody would steal a lot of rare books from a museum or library. Then I could recover them and collect a fat reward.
No, you are not going to turn bloodhound again. I remember the last time you turned detective... Perfect strangers were firing at you as if you were a duck in a shooting gallery.
It's true. I did get shot once, but only because my back was turned at the time. Besides, it was only a flesh wound.
I don't want you getting into trouble. I worry when somebody shoots you.
Well, we've got to raise the money. The sidewalk is staring us in the face right now.
I'll take in floors to scrub. I'll help. And, darling, besides, we've still got Christopher Oates. He's rich. He'll buy lots of books. And he'll be here anyway.
Oh, but Oates is screwy.
But he's just as rich as he is screwy.
Nobody could be that rich. Why, his firm retired him because he could never remember what business they were in.
I know he is a little absent-minded, but... Ah, you see, he's not so bad. He found the door all by himself. No, sit still, dear. I'll get it. Hello, Mr. Oates.
Hello, Joel. Yes.
No. I'm Mrs. Sloan. Take another look.
Yes, of course. Yes. So you are. Yes, that's right.
That's Joel, Mr. Oates, over there, back of the desk.
Yes, of course. Well, good morning, Joel. Say, now, why did you send for me?
No.
You called me. Remember? On the phone? You said it was important.
Important? Oh, yes, of course. I should say it. Now, listen. Now, this must be kept absolutely private. You know Nicholas Torrent, the financier?
Yes, of course, by reputation.
Well, he's in the gravest financial difficulties.
Who isn't?
Torrent needs cash. Yes. Now, this is the time to make him an offer for his Shakespeare manuscript.
Oh, you're crazy. Torrent sell the only scrap of Shakespeare manuscript in the world? A little throwaway worth $500,000? Never.
Then I want you to act as my agent in this deal. You make all the arrangements, see that I don't pay too much for the manuscript. Naturally, I'll pay the usual commission. You see, money is no
object?
Right. Now, spare no expense, Joel. Leave no stone,
unturned.
Yes. Thank you. Good day, Mrs. Oates. Yes.
The name is Sloan. No, not that way, Mr. Oates. That's the, Ah, now you've got it.
If you see a wolf at the door, tell him to beat it. He's got the wrong address.
Can you really do it? Do you think you can get to see Torrent?
The little woman asked me if I can see Mr. Torrent. Do you remember young Phil Sargent, my pal, my protege?
Uh-huh.
Mr. Sargent, please. Well, he's now private secretary to guess who?
Nicholas Torrent.
Right. Now watch me go. Hello, Phil, old boy.
So Joel and Garda and the absent-minded Mr. Oates find themselves at the magnificent Nicholas Torrent Country House for the weekend, along with several other guests. After dinner, the men have adjourned to the library to discuss the sale and purchase of the Shakespeare manuscript. Garda waits in the bedroom for her husband.
Hello. How'd you make out?
We have to give Mr. Torrent Manhattan Island and $24 worth of Indians, but we get the Shakespeare manuscript.
Oh, that's great.
Do you know why I kept talking about stolen books all through dinner?
Trying to give somebody the thought so you can collect the reward?
No.
No?
Before we left town, I talked to Dave Hilliard, the insurance man. He's located a first edition of Paradise Lost, which he's sure was stolen from this house. And yet Torrance made no claim for the insurance.
Uh-huh. Monkey business goes on under this roof.
Furthermore, Hilliard tells me Mr. Torrance's son, Gerald, is a nice, clean-living boy. Only he drinks a lot, gambles heavily, and runs around with some pretty shady dames.
Mm. No vices, eh?
So if there's any dirty work going on here, Gerald Torrent is doing it.
But didn't you notice that your secretary friend, Phil, looked pretty uncomfortable when you were talking about stolen books?
Yes, but so did Gerald. And while we were talking business in the library tonight, I thought I saw Gerald watching us from the terrace.
Oh, Grandpa, what big eyes you have.
I need them in my business.
Well, come over here and look out the window.
Feast my eyes on what?
Look, your little boyfriend, Phil, is out on the terrace with Mr. Torrent's daughter, Christina.
Say, he has got a good job. That was quite a kiss, wasn't it?
Now, don't be an old snoop. Come to bed.
No, this worries me. There's a boy making $50 a week and in love with a very rich girl.
Now, don't be jealous just because you happen to marry a poor one. Oh, darling, I know how fond you are of Phil, but he's in sole charge of $1 million worth of books. He might, well, you know, sort of augment his income a bit.
I know, but I have a feeling Phil isn't like that.
Well, stop peeking out that window and come to bed.
Ah, young love. They're kissing again. Now she's going in alone, so the family won't know they've been together.
Isn't that cute? Remember, Joel, we used to do things like that to fool my family.
Nonsense. Your family practically hurled you at my head. Oh, now Phil's going in. Oh, what's that?
So what is it?
Funny, a car just drove up.
Who's visiting at this unearthly hour? Now, darling, I asked you a question. Who is it?
The very beautiful blonde in evening clothes. And she just disappeared from sight in the direction of the library.
What was that?
It sounds like trouble.
Hey, wait for me!
In the library, Joel finds a startling tableau. On the floor, unconscious, is Vincent Charlton, estimable and wealthy broker, friend of the Torrent family, the wreckage of a large vase around him. The safe door is open, its valuable contents scattered, the priceless Shakespeare manuscript gone. Among other startling clues, Joel finds a gold pencil on the floor. After the confusion subsides, Mr. Sloan knocks on the bedroom door of Gerald Torrent, the son and heir of the family, played by Tom Collins.
Who is it?
It's Sloan, Gerald, my boy.
What do you want?
I'm investigating what happened downstairs tonight.
None of your business.
That's why I'm investigating. Take a look at this, Mr. Gerald Torrent. It's your gold pencil, I believe. At least it's got your name on it.
Where did he get that?
It was on the floor in the library.
But where were you when someone conked Mr. Charlton with the vase?
None of your business.
You better think up a new answer. You're in a rut.
Can't you see I have my pajamas under this room? I was in bed, asleep.
With your shoes on? Oh, come now, Mr. Torrent.
I wasn't in the library.
Well, how did your pencil get there? Now, look here, Gerald. When the police come in on this mess, you'll be in trouble, up to your ears. Now, what do you know about this mystery?
I don't know anything.
But it just happens that I don't believe you. The police won't either. Good night.
Hotel Claremont. Has Miss Bobby Neville come in yet? Hello, Bobby. This is Gerald. Listen, darling, everything went haywire tonight, and I can't talk to you now. I'll see you tomorrow.
Gerald didn't know that Joel Sloan was listening to that phone conversation from outside the bedroom door. Result? Early next morning, Mr. Joel Sloan knocks on the door of Miss Bobby Neville's apartment at the Hotel Claremont. Miss Bobby Neville is played by Joan Marsh.
Come in.
Good morning, man. I represent the Security Mutual Union Insurance Company. Are you provided for in your old age?
So we don't have to worry about that for quite a while, do we?
And what do you want?
First, I want you to take your hand off that telephone. Don't call for help till you hear my story. Gerald sent me. I must say that Gerald seems to have exquisite taste in lovely little blonde girls with wide-open, innocent blue eyes. Not a day over 22, are you?
23 last no. Did you say Gerald sent you?
In a way, that is.
Why did Gerald send you to me?
Thank you, Miss Neville. Or may I call you Bobby? I promise you your confidence is not misplaced.
Tell your story and tell it fast.
My name is Sloan and...
Joel Sloan?
I see Gerald has mentioned my name. We're great chums, Gerald and I.
So what do you want with me? Is Gerald in any trouble?
He might be. And that might go for you, too. The police might get interested in everybody who visited the Torrent Estate last night.
I don't know what you're talking about. Why did you come here? Did Gerald really send you?
Gerald isn't very bright, I'm afraid. He phoned you last night, and it just happened I was standing outside his door.
As long as you and Gerald are friends, I did visit her last night. And you know how it is. The family didn't approve of me, I guess. So we have to meet secretly.
That's very romantic. While you were strolling in Lover's Lane, did you see anything of a very valuable Shakespeare manuscript?
Who is it? Joel Sloan, you dirty double-crossing.
Honest, I didn't get the police up here. I'm surprised. Look at me.
Okay, sister, you're under arrest. Both of you.
Well, officer, I never saw this man before.
What's this all about? What's the charge?
Ain't no charge yet. Chances are, though, it'll be murder.
What?
Murder?
Murder of Nicholas Torrent and the theft of a Shakespeare manuscript.
Nicholas Torrent murdered?
Surprised, ain't you? Well, Mr. Sloan, he was murdered just about the time you grabbed his secretary's car and ran out. And the inspector very much wants to talk to you.
Hey, don't do that, officer. Don't handcuff me to that blonde. What'll my wife say?
Shall we draw the veil of charity over the painful scene when Garda Sloan sees her husband brought in, handcuffed to that seductive young blonde, Bobby Neville? Shall we concede Garda enough good taste to act a perfect lady until Joel is temporarily released by the police and until she gets him alone?
Now, you...
Worm.
Don't flatter yourself to think that you would do a
darling,
thing
this is the time when I need comfort and loving sympathy. I'm in trouble. I've been arrested.
I don't care. Not even if they shoot you at sunrise or burn you at the stake.
But darling, I only went to see that girl on business.
Oh, sure you did, sugar.
What?
She called you sugar.
Well, she thought I was somebody else.
Ha!
I wish I were.
It's uncanny. Every time you turn detective, there's a beautiful woman in a crime for you to chase.
Well, I guess I'm just that kind of a detective.
It's a fine thing. They trapped you right in that hussy's room in a nightgown.
Nightgown? I was wearing the same suit.
Not you, dummy. The girl, Miss whatever her name is.
Oh. I didn't notice what she was wearing.
Didn't you really?
Certainly not.
Well, I could forgive you following a clue, but why did you have to go to her room?
A detective must follow wherever his duty leads.
Well, all right. But you're not to follow any more blonde clues, or I'll have you put on a leash.
Never again. Now am I in good again? How good?
Well, I'm going to let you take me out tonight, and I'm going to let you spend some money on me.
I know just the place. We'll see the sights, possibly have a go at the Wheel of Fortune. Have you ever been to Lucky Nolan's?
No, what is it?
A high-class gambling house. Expensive, exclusive, and right now in connection with the murder of Nicholas Torrent, very interesting.
36, black and even.
Bingo, that's my number.
That's picking them. Do it again.
Do they play for keeps here, Joel?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Right now, for instance, I think they'd like to keep me.
What?
Shh. Those two healthy gentlemen haven't been more than 10 feet behind us since we came in. You cash in and beat it, honey. Wait for me in the car, and if I don't come out in half an hour, phone the inspector.
Right. Try and come home all in one piece, darling. You know, I don't look well in black.
I beg your pardon, my good man. Where can I cash these chips?
Mr. Nolan's office, in there.
Well, I'm rather in a hurry. Isn't there a cashier? No. No, I can see by your face that there is no cashier. Oh, hum.
Come in. Good evening, Mr. Sloan.
Good evening. I just dropped in to cash some chips.
Of course, Mr. Sloan. I have exactly $5,000 worth of chips here.
Haven't you made a typographical error? Those chips are only worth $100.
I adjust the value of the chips to suit myself. Naturally, I expect you to do something for me.
Naturally? What?
Keep out of the Torrent affair and mind your own business.
I had a vague idea you were interested in that case.
Just a matter of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have here $5,000 in cash. I want your promise to drop all interest in anything that happens at the Torrent home.
And if I don't?
You might have an accident.
Serious?
You can't tell.
Now, let me tell your fortune. A tall, dark man who looks strangely like me is going to interest himself in you. I don't like to be threatened. Day, Mr. Nolan.
Did you really think I'd let Mrs. Sloan leave this place so she could phone the police from outside?
Garda? Where is she?
Oh, she's safe enough. In a room downstairs with a couple of my boys. Now listen. Joe?
Yeah, Mr. Nolan?
Is Mrs. Sloan quite comfortable there with you?
A lot more comfortable than you'll be if I ever get my hands on you.
Think it over, Mr. Sloan.
There we leave young Mr. and Mrs. Joel Sloan. Not so fast and not nearly so loose as when we first saw them.
Oh, Bob, you did such a swell job on such short notice.
Thank you. I was delighted to appear with you, Rosalind, and glad to help out.
Thank you.
Now we come to Meredith Wilson's concert hall, where once again Melissa Gorgeous is the guest of honor. She has chosen to sing the famous Tosselli's Serenade. And here's Warren Hull.
Oh, well, there you are. I've been meaning to speak to you for several weeks now, young man.
Young man?
Yes, young man. No person of maturity could continue to make the understatements you do each week about Maxwell House Coffee.
Now, just a minute, Frank.
Enough. Young man, have you said in the past that Maxwell House Coffee is smoother, richer, mellower than any coffee you've probably ever tasted before?
Yes, but...
You see, he admits it. And if that isn't an understatement, I wouldn't know one if it bit me. Now, listen here, Hull. That sort of talk may be all right for Young or Wilson or people of their ilk. But for the great American people, here's the way to do it.
All right, go right ahead.
Let's see. Friends, Maxwell House Coffee has a flavor like the nectar of the gods. A smooth, rich mellowness that Kublai Khan might have searched for in far-off Xanadu. Satisfaction that one thinks of when day is done and the log fire crackles on the hearth. An aroma that reminds you of incense and myrrh in the palace of some far-off oriental potentate. In fact, I always spill some on my necktie in the morning so I can keep the aroma with me all day. You see what I mean? Now, that's the way to sell coffee.
Well, Frank, you really put me to shame. But I want you to know that in spite of my understatements, more and more people are enjoying the new Maxwell House coffee every day. More people, in fact, are buying Maxwell House today than ever before in its history. And, friends, there's a real reason for that. A reason you'll discover in your very first steaming, fragrant cup. You see, the wonderful blend of coffees that first made Maxwell House world famous has now been marvelously enriched. There's an extra goodness in Maxwell House today, an extra flavor and body you're bound to enjoy. Then, too, there's the amazing new radiant roast process we've developed, which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through, and so brings out the true natural goodness of this superb new blend. So if you haven't tried the new Maxwell House lately, why not order a pound from your grocer? We think you'll agree this famous coffee today, more than ever, is good to the last drop.
Now gather around me, boys and girls. Step right into my parlor. Be sure you're ready when I call your name. The cuckoo bird will cuckoo every time you tell a fib. Oh, it really is a fascinating game. Oh, Frank Morgan.
Yes, Bob?
Yours will be the next voice that is heard. Now, come clean, Frank, and... don't forget about the lie-detecting cuckoo bird.
Oh, thank you, Bob. But you know that I've really got to go. It's getting late, and I'm afraid I'll have to hustle. You see, I'm having supper with Miss Russell.
Rosalind?
Well, I don't recall accepting any invitation, Bob. But if Frank thought I had planned a tete-a-tete with him, I'd be simply overjoyed to have a date with him.
Warren, do you think you can tell the
truth? Bob, I'm just a lad who's not afraid if anything I say is overheard.
Quite
so. Oh, no, because Maxwell House Coffee would even please a little cuckoo bird. Now, how about you, Robert the Young? Why don't you take a chance with our tuneful little lie-detecting cuckoo?
That's something I'd like to be very glad to do, Warren. Though you know me as a very honest youth. And you know I never fail to tell the truth. Meredith?
Well, Bob, you're awfully nice to include me in the game. And I'd like to try that little cuckoo bird. But I think I should be seen and not heard.
Daddy Stafford, would you care to put your daughter on the air?
Why, of course, Bob, if you really think I better. But when it comes to showing off, you know I never let her. Go on, sir.
I'd like to take this little cuckoo home with me. And have him hear the stories that the daddy tells my mama when he didn't get home. The happiest we cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo.
Now, Tony Martin, would you like to say adieu?
Well, Bob, there's one thing that I really can assure you. With all the folks I get to meet, being with you has been a treat. I'd be proud to join the gang again real soon, even if I never ever sang another tune.
Cuckoo, cuckoo, well, nothing can follow that, I guess. Next week, we're going to have a new addition to the regular Good News Gang. The exotic singing star, Gertrude Neeson. As extra features, the glamorous Melissa Gorgeous and Kerry Wilson, creator of the Hardy Family series, and whose voice you've heard in his famous What Do You Think? Short subjects. And, of course, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. See you next Thursday. And in the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. Be sure to see Mickey Rooney and Huckleberry Finn. This is Bob Young saying good night.
Here's a special good news bulletin. Day after tomorrow, Saturday at San Francisco. Those of you who are planning to visit Treasure Island and all the wonders of this great exposition will welcome the cheerful stimulation of a steaming, fragrant cup of the new Maxwell House coffee. It'll be right on hand to greet you. Look for the Mayflower Donut Shop on the exposition grounds where Maxwell House is served exclusively. You'll enjoy taking time out over a cup of this coffee that now, more than ever, is good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
KFI, Los Angeles.